When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hail, you heroes, hawks, heralds, crows, pirates, and wardens. Welcome to the Dragon Age Lorecast, where we unpack, discuss, and galaxy brain about all the lore behind the Dragon Age series.
We are so excited to bring you this podcast. Every episode, we'll be talking about a different topic in the Dragon Age universe, from character deep dives to exalted marches and elven gods. We will cover it all.
There will be spoilers. And always remember, swooping is bad.
Hello and welcome to the Dragon Age Lorecast, where we talk about Dragon Age and its lore. I'm one of your hosts, Austin, also known as Teacup.
And I'm your other host, Shelby or SheCup.
And we're here to talk about more Evanuris, more deep dives. It's the big one. It's the one we've all been waiting for. The ones you all have probably been like, when are we going to talk about this one?
Yeah, I mean, we did talk about Solas like a long time ago, back in season two, I think. But yes, we are talking about Finn Harrell this week. So not Solas, which means like we're not going to talk about his romance. We're not really going to talk about like personality traits, those kinds of things. And I guess before we go further, we should give a pretty big disclaimer. Like if you haven't finished Inquisition, like, don't listen to this episode. I mean, the game is 10 years old by this point. Like, you really don't have a right to get mad at us for spoilers, but this is your warning. There's going to be a lot of spoilers here, and you'll probably want to finish Inquisition before Dreadwolf comes out. So, you know, chop chop, get on it. Yeah, and then come back and listen to this episode.
Yeah.
So, before we get into fun facts, we should also let y'all know, we just know right off the bat this week that this is going to be a two-part series. This, I have like almost 10 pages of notes, which normally I have like three. So it's going to be two-part series, maybe three parts, depending on how much we theorize. But I think we'll stick to two. So stay tuned for part two. This is part one of our episode on Finn Harrell. Are we ready for some fun facts?
Always.
Okay, so there are so many items attributed to Finn Harrell. So a lot of my fun facts are about those items. So first and foremost, in Origins, if you play as a city elf, your father, Sirion, will gift you your mother's dagger, and it's named Fang. And the description of the dagger reads this: known as the Fang of Finn Harrell, this elegant dagger was first wielded in the battles to save the Dales. It was passed down to your mother and from her to you. And there's another item in Dragon Age 2. You can find a unique amulet named Finn Harrell's Tooth. And then thirdly, there is a mask of Finn Harrell, which is a mask that appears in the web series Dragon Age Redemption that is allegedly able to tear down the veil, but it does get destroyed. So that remains to be seen. Now, my last fun fact is, it is an item, but it's not specifically something of Finn Harrell. It is actually a book titled The Emergent Compendium, and you can find it in the Black Emporium in Dragon Age 2 during Act 3, and it's somewhat of a magical history book that includes information about life and magic pre-Teventer, as well as it magically creates like new items automatically, and nobody can figure out how that happens. But each of these new additions is an image that is, quote, accompanied by a line of gibberish. And so the codex ends with a few descriptions of the new pages. And the last one, remember, this is from Dragon Age 2, the last entry says, "Two shadowed spheres among stars." And it's subtitled a bunch of gibberish, like a boof, ibox, ek, like literally just keyboard smash. And it actually is a cipher. And the phrase associated with the entry is "an eclipse as Fen'Harel stirred." So this is very, very, very much a prequel preview to Dragon Age Inquisition. So speaking of Inquisition, are we ready to dive right in?
Yeah, let's get in there.
Okay, so usually in these Evanuris episodes, we are starting with names. And I know we've had a lot of back and forth about some of the Evanuris. They have one name. Some of them have five names. Well, Fen'Harel, I think, has the most. And here are his. The Dread Wolf, obviously. But in addition, we have He Who Hunts Alone, The Lord of Tricksters, The Great Wolf, and The Roamer of the Beyond.
So do you remember Griffith Halfpaw from The Inheritance Cycle?
Vaguely.
He is the king of the werecats.
Oh, yeah.
His title is He Who Walks Alone.
Yes, I think I vaguely remember us talking about that, actually.
Yes.
But yeah, it's a fun little tie-in there. But let's get into, and this is going to be most of the rest of our episode, which is not most, but a lot of the rest of our episode, which is his roles and relationships among the Evanuris. So there's actually a butt ton of conflicting information about Fen'Harel in the Dragon Age canon. And I feel like we're just going to present all of it, and you can kind of decide for yourself what is biased and what's not. I personally am of the opinion that all of this information has some truth to it. The level of truth, the weight of the truth, you know, those are things that we can discuss, but we're going to operate as if, you know, there's some portion of this that is correct, that is true. And so that's just how we're approaching it. And we're going to lay it all out for you. So again, going back to the wealth of information that we do have, I think is understandable, given what we know about him and Thetis's general history so far. But let's get into this, and we'll try to sift through some of the contradictions. So the first thing of note is that Fen'Harel is often labeled as kin relations to both the Evanuris and the Forgotten Ones. Now, let me just give a reminder. Obviously, the Evanuris are the main elven gods, the ones you know of, Elgernon, Mithal, the ones we've been covering all throughout this season. So we know who the Evanuris are. Like, that's, you know, we've been talking about that all season. The Forgotten Ones are different. They are a previous pantheon to the Evanuris. They came before. They are now kind of maligned, or at least were in the time of the Evanuris. They are typically seen as evil, even though we're not really sure, because we don't really know anything about them. Now, there's another group called the Forbidden Ones. Sounds very similar. They are also evil. They are demons. That is a completely separate thing from all of this. So don't get confused. Ignore the Forbidden Ones for now. The important thing to remember is that Fen'Harel is said to be relations to both the Evanuris and the Forgotten Ones. However, at the same time, it's also said in Codex entries and in Mosaics, or at least implied in Mosaics in Inquisition, that Fen'Harel was actually immortal, which also may imply that the Avenuris were also mortals. Solas, on the other hand, freely admits this and argues, yeah, they fashioned themselves as gods, but they were not actually gods. And he argues that their power, their godlike power, just came from extraordinary magical prowess. So that is the first contradiction that we have. Whether or not the Avenuris were really powerful mortals, whether they were actually gods, who Fen'Harel is actually aligned with, all of that. Do you have thoughts thus far? Yeah.
So I've got a couple. So buckle up. The first thing is that we see this very common in the religions of Thetis, of the bridge between the mortal and the divine. Andraste for the Chantry walks that line of that bridge between the mortal and the divine. The Teventer magisters, the magisters of old, like Corypheus, like the architect, they walk that line for the old religion of Teventer. And then, you know, the Avar, obviously, like, they view the spirits as divine, and their mages are that bridge between mortal and divine.
And I honestly think you can even argue that the way the dwarven people treat their paragons is akin to this too, even though they wouldn't necessarily claim, oh yeah, they're gods, but they function that way. They're revered in that way.
Yes. So, and this is a common thing in Earth, in our world, real world religions, of a lot of religions craft this bridge between the mortal and the divine. That serve that function. So that makes it really real. It's interesting because the Avenuris as a whole, the gods either fall into one of two categories from what we're seeing so far, which is that they're either born divine, like Mithal, like Elgernon, like Faladin and Dearthamin, or they're mortals that are raised to divinity, like Gilanon, like Fen'Harel. And so there's enough conflicting information to say maybe it's both and. Maybe they both exist in that way, like there were actual gods, and then there were mortals that rose to godhood. I think, and like in Greek pantheon, in Greek mythology, like that exists. There are gods that were gods from birth, and there are gods who, you know, rose to godhood. For example, Dionysus is a mortal who was gifted godhood by the Olympians. But I think this lays a point of, we have to realize that Solas might not be lying to us, but Solas has an agenda. Solas, at the end of the day, he wants the Inquisitor, he wants the world to see what he's doing is necessary. And for that to happen, he needs to present the Avenuris in the worst light possible. And so I think that's where the conflict comes in, is like the Dalish and their story, they're trying to present the Avenuris in the best light possible, because they're like, this is our culture. We need to revere them. We need to honor them. The Chantry tried to eradicate this, so we need to preserve it. Whereas Solas is like, none of this, like, revered is true, because they were all flawed, slave-keeping mortals who uses magic as might. And that's why I can destroy the world.
Yeah, and I think that what you've said about Solas has an agenda, not necessarily even a bad one, because I do think that Solas thinks he's really trying to save his people, but an agenda nonetheless, and, you know, not all agendas are bad. Some people just, you know, we all have things we want to accomplish, and we highlight specific parts of our stories to get that point across. There's nothing evil about that. That's pretty natural. But Solas is doing the same thing. He's just taking it to an extra level, and we have to be mindful of that, especially going into the next game, because we may have options of who we're going to trust, and not all may be as it seems.
And, like, one thing that I love about Dragon Age so much, and that's why, and even, like, in some online discussions, I find it so different in storytelling and world building from Baldur's Gate, is because Dragon Age, your choices, a lot of times the choices that you make are the right choice for one group of people, but the wrong choice for another group of people that are in an almost equal setting that exists. I mean, we can argue, no, mages and Templars are not equal in their setting. But there are certain choices that are good for, that might be good for the elves, but might be bad for mages. And, you know, that's how Dragon Age works. So likely this next game, when we're coming in, the choice is not going to be, oh, Finharrel is actually evil, and the choice you make is either to side with the evil person or not side with the evil person. There isn't like, oh, one clear light side path, one clear dark side path. It's more of, there are different options that are going to have blessings and consequences for whatever choice you make.
Yeah, and that's a great way to put it. And so while we're talking about the Evanuris, let's just move on a little bit. So I'm sure if you're listening to this and you've played Inquisition, you know that the probably biggest and most significant piece of lore surrounding Finharrel is his betrayal of the Evanuris. And there are a lot of names for this. Most people refer to it as the Great Betrayal, but the Dread Wolf refers to it as the Truce. And similarly, the Evanuris have referred to it as the Hunt. So there are a lot of different lenses that you can look at this from. And I think it's important to kind of keep all of them in mind while we go through. Yeah.
I don't expect you have an answer to this question, but I think it's one we need to ask. If Solas is calling the Great Betrayal the Truce, who is he brokering a truce with?
I think the answer is the Elven people and the Evanuris. Mm. Because then they are no longer under the slavery of the Evanuris.
I guess that's true. So you could argue he's trying to like create and avoid an all-out conflict between the Evanuris and the Elven people.
No, I don't think that's the case. I think he's trying to avoid the Evanuris claiming, you know, all powerful, no one can ever stop them levels of godhood.
Hmm. I see.
So anyway, moving on a little bit. So we have a few things to talk about with the Great Betrayal, a few different perspectives. So according to Merrill, the Great Betrayal by Finharrel was done so that he could receive a specific weapon, a blade specifically. Others have claimed that he did this in order to rule the Fade, and even Elvenon itself, specifically without the interference of the other Elven gods. However, Solas claims that the Great Betrayal was much more complicated than any other explanation we've ever heard. Conversations with him in Trespasser and conversations between Solas and Cole reveal that Finharrel did indeed seal away the Evanuris, but that he felt that he had no other options, and that he made the decision with great regret in order to save them and the Elven people from an eternal civil war. And so when Solas entered Uthanera, his expectation was that he was going to wake up to a much better future for the elves. The elves would be prosperous once more and not shackled by slavery. Unfortunately, as we know, this did not occur, and Solas wakes up to the Dragon Age world of Thedas and is quite literally shocked and appalled.
Yeah, I mean, obviously that would be that going to sleep and waking up 1,000 years in the world where you are would be shocking enough in and of itself. But to basically realize that all your efforts was for nothing because you had no idea that you could anticipate Tevinter's rise to power, the Orlesian rise to power, and Droste, whatever is the actual like spiritual reason behind all of that. All of those things happen to set up humans as the dominant race of Thedas.
Yeah, and I mean, if we just think about somebody waking up today in 2024, after 1,000 years, like that's the year 1024, not 1924, 1024. I can't even begin to imagine what that would be like. You know, like in 1024, Germany is tribal still. Like the Vikings are Viking. The
Italy isn't a
Catholic
country.
Church. Yeah, Italy. Well, Italy doesn't become a country until like way later. But like,
yeah,
the Catholic Church and the Orthodox Church haven't split yet. Like, I mean, it would be insane. Like, think about Captain America, and when he wakes up, I think it's 60 years later. 70 years later, something like that. I multiply that by 10, multiply that by 15, and that's what you have. So I can understand for Solas, it would probably be extremely jarring, extremely difficult to handle. And I think that that would explain some of his standoffishness at the beginning of Inquisition, because he's experiencing things completely new to him. And so I can have a little bit of compassion for that. But moving on a little bit, we do learn elsewhere in Inquisition, namely from Abalos, that the incident that initiated the Great Betrayal was actually the murder of Mithal. And Abalos freely admits that Fenharel was not involved in this, which we know. And then following her murder, you know, the Evanuris are fighting, like there's friction, it's kind of a mess. Fenharel steps in and he banishes the Evanuris by creating the veil. And as we know from the rest of Inquisition, this then initiates the loss of most magic throughout Thedas. It initiates the quickening lifespan of the elves and a lot more that the now Dalish view as betrayal. Solas claims, specifically, this is very important, Solas claims that every alternative was worse. And that's a direct quote.
There's some like parallels that I want to talk about a little bit here, especially with like Chantry lore and Chantry like history and belief, in that like there are so many parallels between Mithal's story and Andraste's story. And I find it so interesting to hear that like Solas kind of plays this role of not a one-for-one parallel, but of Hisarion, of this idea of like maybe Fenharel knew that they were going to murder Mithal and then had some regret later and then like spills the tea and comes to all of this, which is kind of what Hisarion does when he converts. And he's basically, oh, well, her husband put this up and that causes him to lose power and to do all that like similar thing of this person who has regret and then sets forth motion that takes the people who betrayed the beloved one, Mithal, beloved by the elven people, and Andraste, obviously beloved by her followers, into a sense where they're defeated and taken out of power or sealed away. I just think the parallels are really interesting.
I completely agree. And that's part of the reason why I do think that the idea that Andraste was another avatar of Mithal is a compelling one. I don't think it's beyond the realm of possibility. It's very fascinating to me because you're right. There are so many parallels between their stories. But speaking of Mithal, the last kind of thing before we get into some codex, the last thing I want to talk about with the Great Betrayal is that the Temple of Mithal itself, with its mosaics and codex entries and conversations that you can have, reveals that it would be more accurate to depict Fenharel as a god of rebellion rather than one of trickery and deception. So keep that in mind, keep that in your back pocket, but let's move into some codex entries, because there is a codex entry named Fenharel, the Dread Wolf, which appears in both Origins and Inquisition. And Solas's conversations present a markedly different story about himself than what the codex entries have already established in the lore. So I just wanted to read three quotes that I think very clearly show something different than who we meet in Inquisition. So the first one is, "There is precious little we know about Fenharel, for they say that he did not care for our people." The second one says, "Fenharel kept to himself and plotted the betrayal of all the gods." And lastly, After the destruction of Arlathan, it is said that Fen'Harel spent centuries in a far corner of the earth, giggling madly and hugging himself in glee. And now we know this last one is not true because Solas was in Uthanera. So, yeah, but also we know that it's not true. Like, he did not giggle and he was not gleeful. Like, every time he's ever spoken of the Evanuris, you can just tell with the voice acting and the lines, like, he is filled with maybe not remorse, but sadness over the actions he had to take. So we know that he's not happy about these decisions.
Right. And it's like, it is regret in a sense of, it's not regret of what he did, but that the situation came to the point that he had to do what he did.
Yes, that's a great way to put it.
I think it's really interesting because it calls to mind, like, I would see for a moment that, like, before he entered Uthanera in a little bit, him reaching this point of, like, madness, almost. Like, because the hugging and the glee and all of that stuff kind of paints a picture of madness. And I want to talk about this. There's this old Batman comic. Don't really rise that much. But, you know, Batman goes through this whole, like, big battle or whatever, and he's eventually sent back in time. And he's sent back in time to the exact moment where his parents are murdered. And he realizes that Batman has to be created, otherwise the world will not cease to exist with his knowledge. So he disguises himself and he is the murderer of his parents, and setting his younger self, his past self, on the trajectory for becoming Batman. And he obviously, like, goes crazy and filled with madness and regret and all of this. And the scene ends with him laughing uncontrollably and putting white paint on his face and, like, a red smile, showing that, like, he becomes the Joker because of this, this kind of circular thing. And I think that we might be, when I hear that story, that's what I think of, like, this idea that someone who regrets and is this immense trauma of what they had to do, that all they can do is result into this kind of maddening madness laughter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's an apt comparison, because I do very much get the picture that he is torn over what he has to do. Like, he doesn't want to destroy these people that have come to be his family, even though he has conflict with them, even though he hates some of the choices that they've made. He doesn't want to have to banish them, but he feels like he has to.
Right.
But let's for a minute talk about what Solas was doing, what Fen'Harel was doing, rather, during the height of Elvenon and Arlathan, and then we'll get into our mid-break. So, during the height of the Elven Empire, a lot of the Evanuris are competing with one another. They're trying to get to the height of whatever their specific chosen field is. But Fen'Harel was not doing that. He did not really have any interest in competition with the other Evanuris. Like, he was not out there hunting for greater and grander and larger beasts like Andriel was. He was not, you know, presiding over law-breaking citizens. He was not ushering more and more souls into the afterlife like Faladin. He wasn't doing any of this. In fact, he was doing something completely different, something that probably would have been derided by his siblings, and that was that he was working as a protector of the common people, especially those who were enslaved by the Evanuris via their Valisleen, which we'll talk about after the mid-break. And so he's working to protect, like, regular everyday elves, and he actually granted a lot of formerly enslaved elves their freedom, and he would give them sanctuary at his temple, and the freed slaves guarded this sanctuary with their lives, and Fen'Harel protected them all. And we'll get into that later, but that's a really important thing that I think goes missed in his character. Like, he is very much a protector of the enslaved. And so this is important to remember.
Well, before we go into our mid-bake, I think I just want to go back a little bit about, like, I do think it's important to notice, like, the picture of, like, we've got two pictures of Finn Harrell. We've got Finn Harrell as the betrayer and the deceiver, and Finn Harrell as this champion of the common people. And I think that those two, as you pointed out in, like, this research and that's come up in there, those two images are going to run and compete with each other throughout the lore that we're going to find. Because the lore, I've read, the lore previous Dragon Age Inquisition is going to fall mainly in that line of he's the betrayer. And then what we get from Inquisition with Solas and Trespasser is going to be in the opposite.
Yes.
And kind of painting those two pictures. But I want to shift gears a little bit to talk about Varric and Varric's nickname for Solas, which is Chuckles. Now, you could take this as, like, Varric being his normal sarcastic self and, you know, saying, like, oh, Solas is so serious, let me call him, you know, Chuckles. But it also implies a little bit that Varric knows a little bit what going on. I think it's a little too on the nose for him to give that nickname and not have an inkling of an idea of what is happening.
I mean, that's fair, but how would Varric know? And why would Varric let Solas get away with betraying the Inquisition?
That is a fair critique, because I don't think that he would do that.
I think that it's the writers playing a joke on us, like, y'all don't know who this man really is, but we're going to give him a nickname that's going to be a callback to this early tiny piece of lore.
Yeah, that makes sense. I just wanted to talk about it. Before we got away from the giggling and hugging Finn Harrell, I wanted to talk about Varric giving him the nickname Chuckles.
Yeah, for sure. But yeah, so now I think is a good time for our mid-break.
All right.
They like to read. What's wrong with that?
It's frivolous. There are more important things for me to do.
That's just her favorite.
Nobody asked you, Tevinter.
I couldn't finish the last one you lent me. I actually feel dumber for having tried.
It's literature. Smutty literature. Whatever you do, don't tell Varric.
No offense, but might I try? I've got a quick hand, after all. Ha, let's see. Oh, when was the last time I slipped my hand into some dark hole? I remember, long story that.
You hurt my head sometimes, Solas.
Yes, I have been known to do that.
Well, welcome to the middle of the show, where we take time to thank our patrons. Thank you so much to all of our patrons. Thank you especially to our first patrons, Lisa M. and Genesis. Come and join our Patreon. Come and sign up and go to patreon.com/DALorecast, and you can join our Patreon and get access to exclusive merch that is happening this year. With merch, another great way. If you don't want to join the Patreon, but you want to support us, there are other ways to do that. One of those is our merch store. We launched a merch store that you can find on our website, cupspodcasting.com, where there are lots of great Dragon Age content, clothing, hats, mugs, all kinds of stuff. Also, Assassin's Creed content is there. It's really great. But you can do that. You can also leave us ratings and reviews on Apple or Spotify. If you leave us 5 stars and some kind words, we will read out your review on a future episode of the show. And so today we have a comment on our Templar episode from... this is really messing with me because we just did a Templar episode on Assassin's Creed. And I forget that both Dragon Age and Assassin's Creed have Templars. Similar, but different. But anyway, so this is from Sabrina L. on our Templar episode and says, just wanted to say thank you for making this podcast. I do a lot of mindless work with numbers and my days have gone by so much faster playing this while at work. Love you guys. Thank you so much, Sabrina L. We are glad to help you through your work day and making things that are mindless or tedious go by faster. We really appreciate that. And the last thing I have to tell you is to join the Discord. You can join it. You can hang out with us, talk about Dragon Age, talk about Assassin's Creed, talk about Star Wars, talk about Baldur's Gate, talk about gaming, share pictures of your pets, see Shelby's garden in the greenhouse channel. I say that like I'm not going to benefit from this garden, but it is Shelby's garden. So you can do that on the Discord, and that's the Cups Podcasting and More Discord. That link's on our website. It's in the episode description. You can find it. But we love to grow that community, and it is one of the best places on the internet. And Shelby, that's all we have for the middle of the show. So I think we can get back to diving in to Finn Harrell.
All right, let's do it.
Abominations are always so awkward at family reunions. Have you ever seen an abomination? They are ugly.
Dorian, those words you say, what do they mean?
What, you mean like mendicant? Ultimatum?
No arse when you're mad. Vishanti Kofas. You're swearing, I know it.
Vishanti Kofas. It's Tavine, relics of the old tongue. We still use the colourful phrases.
And it means what?
Literally, you shit on my tongue.
Oh, you fear barbarians will swoop down upon you.
Yes, swooping is bad.
So, in the second half, we're going to talk about the temples, statues, shrines, etc. to Solas that we see. And we're also going to talk about some stories about what Finn Harrell was doing. And then that's going to be the end of this episode, and we'll talk about his reputation among the Dalish next time. So let's dive into temples really quickly. First and foremost, I don't have this on the list, but I should tell you that there was a temple to Finn Harrell. Like almost all of the elven gods had one. We just don't know where every single one is. And this is the same for Solas Finn Harrell's. But we do know that he had some kind of temple sanctuary because that's where the freed elven slaves would go. And that's, you know, that's what they defended. So now there are a lot of statues of Finn Harrell throughout the games, but especially in Inquisition. So there are two statues of wolves in the Emprise de Leon. There are two large wolf statues in the Exalted Plains that you kind of walk under. They make an archway a little bit. There's a statue of a wolf in the Deep Roads that's attributed to Finn Harrell. There's a statue in the Shattered Library. There is a statue in the Forgotten Sanctuary in the Elven Mountain Ruins. There are statues in the Darvarad. And there is a shrine in the Crow Fens in the Exalted Plains. So by far, this is the most shrines and statues we have of any Evenerys.
So I just wanted to, this is kind of a little bit of a tangent. So if you don't want to talk about it, you can tell me that we'll cut it or whatever. But do you think it's a coincidence that the only really like affected creatures, like physical creatures that we fight in regards to the breach are like possessed corrupted wolves other than like actual demons or other like fade creatures? But like it's only wolves that seem to be affected.
Is it though?
I'm pretty sure. The rest of the beasts are just regular creatures acting in their nature.
I mean, that makes me think, no, it's not a coincidence at all. But I'll be really honest with you. I have never noticed that.
I mean, I haven't either until you were saying all these statues of wolves. And I was like, man, wolves, like, yeah, there's a lot of statues of wolves around Inquisition. And I said, that makes sense. And I was like, oh, but there's also this. And like, it's the only one that like is actively commented on that like the wolves are being affected by the breach and demons and stuff like that. Because there's the whole quest in the Interlands to deal with that. True.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I don't think anyone knows the answer to that question, but if we ever interview one of the developers, put that in your pocket.
Yeah. Patrick Weeks knows. I'll find out.
Okay. So, okay, let's talk about the ancient mosaics in Trespasser, because they give us a lot more information about who Finn Harrell was and what he was doing during the time of Elvenon and Arlathon. And now we have like four of these to talk about. So the first one is called Wolf's Welcome. And basically it says that there is a wash of powerful magic that carries an impression of welcome. Images flash by, elven slaves fleeing to this place in ancient times, greeted by others who then tend their wounds. Words are not so much heard as felt. And there's a quote that says, Finn Harrell bids you welcome. Rest knowing the Dread Wolf guards you and his people guard this valley. In this place, you are free. In trusting us, you will never be bound again. And the Inquisitor comments and says, that was like Veilfire. It claimed that this was a refuge for elven slaves. This whole valley was a sanctuary, quote, created by the Dread Wolf Finn Harrell. This doesn't make sense. In Dalish legends, Finn Harrell is our god of misfortune.
It's interesting to me. One of the few things, the first thing that kind of steps out to me is the words are not so much heard as felt. I'm reminded of, like, again, another call out to the inheritance cycle of like how dragons basically communicate. Like they can speak, but their main effort of communication is through senses, like communicating smells or feelings or thoughts or images. Like that's how they communicate. And that's what that reminded me of. And I think it's interesting, this mosaic, that it's really hard to argue with architecture. And say, especially when you're dealing with a culture like the Dalish, who are an oppressed group who is losing their culture, and then you're immediately confronted with something that is older than the Dalish that is saying something different. Biblical studies and ancient text studies, the older something is, typically we kind of view that as the original intent. That is the assumption that is made. So, but again, like, I think this is an important thing to remember, that these are all crafted by mortals, and those mortals have a specific means of what they want to communicate. And maybe to some people, Finn Harrell was the god of misfortune, but to others, he was a god of rebellion and liberation. And I think that you can see that in different in our own world religions, how one religion views, especially the ancient polytheistic religions, how one religion viewed a god of one religion and how that religion viewed that god were vastly different. And you could assume that they were different deities at that point.
Yeah, and I think that that absolutely is the case here. And even like, you know, just imagine, put yourself in the shoes of an elf who was enslaved, who was freed by Finn Harrell. You're going to have a completely different reaction to him versus the high priest of Elgrinnon or the high priest of Andriel, who notoriously had conflict with Finn Harrell. Like, you're going to view them differently. And that's natural. It's just how people are. So keep that in mind when we go through the rest of these stories. So the second one is titled The Promise of Finn Harrell, which says, a wash of powerful magic carries a pang of hope. Images flash by, a man in wolf skin standing with a group of freed slaves, clasping one's arm in friendship. Words aren't so much heard as felt. Finn Harrell has falsely been named a god, but is as mortal as any of you. He takes no divine mantle and asks that none be bestowed upon him. He leads only those who would help willingly. Let none be beholden but by choice. The Inquisitor says, this is Finn Harrell helping former slaves as a mortal, not a god.
So this is really interesting because it's kind of like the humble, like, leader, you know, the place of like, some people revere me as a god, but I'm just a man. I'm just a person who's trying to do this. I'm flawed just like other people, like the humble leader kind of image that's being displayed here. It's interesting because it's like falsely named a god. But again, it's this idea that Finn Harrell is this one helping the people and leading kind of this rebellion. And like, it's this idea that plays around that, like, who we've been taught is the enemy was actually the one who was fighting for our freedom and doing what's good for us. I mean, we see this even in our other show with Assassin's Creed, in that, like, in the biblical narrative, a lot of times Eve is presented as this rebellious spirit, who rebellious woman who takes the apple and screws up everything for humanity. But in reality, in the Assassin's Creed universe, Eve is a champion who leads humanity in a rebellion against the Isu. But it's mm-hmm. the people who are writing the history that are dictating how you view that person. And I think this is, we're kind of seeing in the Thetis universe, I don't think the developers are trying to point to us to say, like, everything we've ever established in lore about these religions is not true. It's more about these things are so complex and the people are so removed from the time in which it all happened that there are such conflicting ideas. It's a way to make the world more real.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's also interesting because, like, on one level, yes, history is written by the victors, right? But Finn Harrell is the victor. He won. Like, he got what he wanted. He banished and got rid of the Avenirus, right? But also he goes into Uthanera for 100 years. And so things develop around him, without his input, without his clarification of the story. And, you know, if there's one thing humans are going to do, it's try to make meaning out of something. And, you know, if we don't have somebody there who knows everything that happened and is the one that can be like, oh, well, actually, this is what happened, then we're going to attribute that to something or someone and try to figure it out ourselves. It's right. Just, again, it's just what people do. But let's move on from this one and talk about the lies of the Avenirus. So this one starts with a wash of powerful magic carries a sensation of bitter fury. Images flash by, elven mages enslaving tens of thousands, making arrogant proclamations of godhood. Words are not so much heard as felt. The gods, our Avenirus, claim divinity, yet they are not but mortals powerful in magic who can die as you can. In this place, we teach those who join us to unravel their lies. The Inquisitor says, this claims the elven gods were just Avenirus, powerful but completely mortal mages. If that's true, Finn Harrell was teaching these freed slaves the truth about these false gods.
Again, I think it's interesting, like, this place is obviously, like, as we said, like, the Shattered Library is almost kind of this temple of Finn Harrell, who's trying to paint a very specific picture of Finn Harrell. But one of the things that is interesting to me here is that not only is it lifting up Finn Harrell in this morality stance, but it is discrediting the Avenirus in the same breath. And I find it interesting that this temple never mentions the Forgotten Ones. Now, they're forgotten for a reason, but they're the evil deities. They're the ones who are supposed to be evil, but the way this is planning up with Finn Harrell is that no, they're not, which is, I think, is interesting from a god who in the lore is this go between the two groups, the bridge mm-hmm. between the Avenirus and the Forgotten Ones.
Right. Like, are we going to find out that the Forgotten Ones are actually the good guys and that they were benevolent deities as opposed to malevolent mortals? Or are we going to find out that they're actually more evil? Honestly, I think it could go either way. But the interesting thing to me about this one is that, like, it's interesting to me that, yes, Solas Finn Harrell says that the Avenirus, they're actually just really powerful mortals. But at the same time, they function as gods in their society, right? And so to me, you know, usually when we talk about these kinds of stories in mythology and whatever, it's typically like, oh, well, the people saw them as a god, but they didn't take advantage of that. Like, you know, they were a good guy. Like, they just were revered so much by the people. But it seems to me that the Avenirus, like, specifically abuse the fact that the elven people thought they were gods, that they revered them as gods. And so they kind of said, okay, well, we can become gods. we can take that power for ourselves because the people are already laying it at our feet. And to me, this story from Solas, from Finn Harrell, confirms that.
Yeah, it's very interesting, the conflicting images that we are getting from Inquisition mainly. And I think that, like, it's hard to, like, take. For me, it's hard to take the stuff we learn in Inquisition as, like, cold hard fact, because it's so obviously, like, it is not an objective source. And the truth is, in most history and most, like, learning about all of this stuff, there is no such thing as an objective source. Every source has something that it's looking to do, or a culture or time period that it's steeped in, that affects how it views the world. And so, like, I don't think, when I read this, I don't think I can take it and be like, oh, well, this means that, you know, the Dalish are wrong about their deities. I think that what happens is, what I think is probably happening in reality, is that there were ideas about the Evanuris and ideas that Finn Harrell did in leaving a slave rebellion. And because he threatens Evanuris power, it gets hidden. It gets buried, because the truth of the matter is like, Solas probably enters in Uthanera after he does what he does in an attempt to be like, I'm not going to become what I locked away. They need to learn to lead and survive without the Evanuris presence. I'm imposing my own thought process on Solas, but that's what I would imagine he would say of why he chose not to stay around, is that he wanted them to lead themselves in freedom. The problem with that is that a lot of the survivors were the priests of the other Evanuris, who then dictated what came out after that.
Right. But I also think that multiple things can be true at once. I don't necessarily think it has to be the Evanuris's point of view versus Solas's point of view versus Finn Harrell's point of view. I definitely think the truth is somewhere more in the middle. But I also, like, for me, like, I also do tend to side with Solas more on this, because the evidence points in his direction. The evidence points to the fact that the Evanuris are evil, with the slavery, with the wars that they held, with the subjugation of the dwarves and the killing of the Titan. You know, there's so much that the Evanuris did that was massively messed up, that leads me to say, you know what, Finn Harrell, you're probably right. There's probably something here. And now, that's not to say, like we discussed earlier, that he doesn't also have an agenda, because he definitely does. But I mean, for me, I completely understand where he's coming from, wanting to take down these Evanuris, wanting to restore the world to what his vision of it was going to be back in the day. So I get it. I get where he's coming from.
Right. I guess my point of the matter is like, why does Mithal get a pass? I know that Solas says that she's the best of them, but she didn't not participate in the slavery. She has Vala slain. She would have had slaves and all of that. Why does she get a pass while the others don't?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's fair. I think that Mithal is the one that kind of treats him fairly, almost. Maybe not completely, but I think that she is the one that kind of gives him a pass, takes him under her wing, listens to him probably more than any of the rest of them do, because it's always said that they've had a close relationship. And so I think that that's why she gets a pass. She gets a pass because they have a close, intimate relationship, and he's biased like anybody else is. You know, it's easy to think of Finn Harrell Solas as this all-powerful, all-knowing being who is beyond reproach. But the fact is, he's not. The fact is that he makes mistakes just like the rest of us. And so pardoning Mithal, maybe that's one of them. Maybe it's not a mistake specifically, but I think that that is one area where he does treat her differently than the rest of them.
And I think it's interesting, especially, and we haven't really talked about this, and this is really the last point, because we do have one more thing to talk about, and I want to get on because we're running a little out of time. But we have no origin of Finn Harrell. Like, we have an origin of Mithal. We have an origin of Elgrinnon. We have one of Andriel. We have one of Gilanon. We have one of Dirthamin, of Falandin. All of them have been preserved. But Fenharel seemingly comes out of nowhere. Like, no birth, no origin. He is dropped in the middle as a fully powered god who is doing something. So this begs the question of, obviously, we can take the route that's, oh, his origin was lost and wasn't preserved, which might be because, you know, if he goes through Thanera and the followers of the old Evanuris were the ones who survive, then they would have buried a lot of information about Fenharel. But I do think that that's an intentional step from the writers to shroud that in mystery and create Fenharel as this mysterious, there's a literary term I can't remember of, like, you know, dropping in and leaving. Because that's really what he does in the lore, in the, like, mythology of the Dalish, is he comes in and he betrays and then he disappears.
I think there are a lot of theories that explain his origin, but you're right that we don't have it. Something that I think would be interesting, a theory of my own, that I think would explain a lot of questions we have regarding his relationship with Mithal is, what if Fenharel is the son of Mithal by a regular mortal elf? I think that would explain why she seemingly sacrifices herself for him. I think that would explain their close, intimate relationship. I think that would explain a lot of the ire from the rest of the Evanuris toward Fenharel, which then also explains why the Dalish also regard him similarly. But we just don't know.
It's definitely interesting, and I don't think it's just a coincidence that the writers didn't write an origin story for Fenharel. I think that there probably is one out there, and we're going to find out. But Solas kind of argues that Fenharel, like, that is something that he became. Rather, like, there was always Solas, and then Solas became Fenharel.
Yes, very much. And it also begs the question of, have there been other Fenharels over the years?
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, that also might explain a lot of the conflicting information. If there are different Fenharels, the Fenharel who led a rebellion and sealed away the Evanuris might be a different one than the one who is the trickster, the god of misfortune. And all of these ideas have been combined into one being as Fenharel, but really there are multiple Fenharels.
Okay, so this is kind of the last thing that I want to talk about, and this is a major plot point in the Solas romance. So if you are not wanting spoilers from that, you may want to skip this episode or the rest of this episode. But this one is titled, this is the last mosaic, and it's titled The Lifting of the Balasleen, and it says this: a wash of powerful magic carries a sensation of determination. Images flash by. Former slaves in ranks with Fenharel, armed and strong. Their skin is clear. The face tattoos, the elven Valisleen, are gone. Words are not so much heard as felt. The brand of the Evanuris can be lifted from you, that all may know you oppose their cruelties. None here are slaves. All are under our protection. All may choose to fight. And the Inquisitor says, at the fresco above the mosaic, says, that's Fenharel removing Dalish Valisleen. Solas said they were used to mark slaves. And then in the armory below the mosaic, the Inquisitor says, hidden weapons. These freed slaves actually did fight back against the Evanuris posing as gods. So all of these mosaics, you know, it very much seems that the Inquisitor does actually believe that Solas did all these things, that this is really truly who Fenharel says he is. And especially with the Valisleen, I definitely can understand why that would be a harder thing to accept from a Dalish elf specifically, who has Valisleen, who maybe, regardless of whether or not you romanced him and got your Valisleen removed. But I can understand how this would be maybe not quite a devastating, but shocking revelation. Something that kind of takes away part of the meaning of your culture and your religion. But this is a very important part of who Finn Harrell is.
Yeah, I think the revelation of the point of, like, especially in the romance, when Solas reveals the vow of slaying being marks of slaves, it could be a real turning point of, like, and we think about this of, like, especially when you're introduced to someone who really has out there beliefs, they never really start with the, oh, we're really out there. It's little things that, like, oh yeah, that makes sense. It's like, okay, I could see how that, I might not agree with that, but this, I could see your way of thinking that. And then in the later of the romance, Solas drops this bomb that these markings that your culture, your history has so valued are actually tools of oppression. And I could see how in role play, I think an Inquisitor could go either way. They could go like, okay, like get rid of this. Like, I don't want to be a part of that. Or they could have a staunch thing of like, no, this is not orthodox Dalish beliefs. This is not what we believe. Like, this is over, whatever, which I think is why it's a point of whether the romance continues or not.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that also it definitely makes me curious about why he is so insistent on this point. Is it just because of his past experiences, or is there something coming that he doesn't want this person that he loves to be enslaved to another Avernus, especially since they might also be enslaved to Mithal, depending on whether your Inquisitor drank from the Well of Sorrows.
Right, right. That makes sense. And we don't really know what is behind the veil and what is really in the depths of the Fade. So it really could be that Solas is trying to protect us from something that is really dangerous out there.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I know it's easy to think that the Avernus are dead, but we've never once had that said in the lore. The lore says that the Avernus are gone, that they've been locked away, that they've been betrayed, all of these kinds of things. But it's, as far as to my knowledge, it's never said that the Dalish have all died or that the Avernus have all died. That is not something that is said about the Avernus specifically. So it is very possible that we could be looking down the barrel at them coming back, or at least some of them, one of them coming back. Who knows?
Yes, I will not believe that anyone is dead until they are pronounced dead on screen.
Yes, for sure.
But yeah, I think we have one more point of, you know, Solas, obviously, like, does he have Balisling?
Yeah, so that is the last thing I wanted to mention in this episode, which is that Finn Harrell does not have a Balisling associated to him for obvious reasons, because he doesn't believe in that. But yes, so we'll get into next week why, what the Dalish say about why he doesn't have a Balisling. But for this week's episode, we know the truth of it. That is that, you know, Solas Finn Harrell was a liberator of slaves rather than an enslaver himself. So that's why he doesn't have Balisling. And we'll leave it at that until next time.
All right. Well, thank you so much for bringing this research for this part one of Finn Harrell. Obviously, a very important god for the lore right now. And so there's a lot to unpack. If you have more questions, like, feel free to email us. Feel free to hop in the Discord and discuss it. There's a lot of, we're both obviously knowledgeable of the games, but we have a lot of listeners who are in the Discord who are equally as knowledgeable about the games and love to talk about it. And so odds are, if you have a question, you come on to the Discord, they'll be able to answer that. With that, I want to acknowledge that we are releasing this episode has released on March 28th. On April 4th, there will not be an episode due to Easter and my job. I am not able to record during that week. And so the part two of this episode will release on April 11th. There will be a break between the parts, so you'll have to wait, but just pretend you're practicing waiting for Dreadwolf, or actually waiting for Dreadwolf, because we're all doing that. And so it'll be fun, but we'll look forward to that. But thank you so much for listening to the Dragon Age Lorecast. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Dragon Age Lorecast. You can find us on Twitter at DALorecast.
If you have any lore questions, topics to unpack, or side character suggestions, join our Cups Podcasting and More Discord server. It's easily the best place on the internet. You can also support us financially through our Patreon. You can find us there on patreon.com/DragonAgeLoreCast.
The Dragon Age Lorecast is part of the Robots Radio Network. For more information about the Robots Radio Network, join the Discord server via the link in our episode description.
If you enjoyed the show or learned something new today, please subscribe, leave us a review, and join the Patreon. And if you enjoyed our intro and outro music, give a big thank you to Pipe Man Studios. Thank you, Pipe Man. Thanks again for listening to the Dragon Age Lorecast. We'll see you next time.
When a wasteland detective and a vault girl cross paths, no criminal is safe.
You're both under arrest.
Don't move a muscle if you know what's good for you.
Based in Bethesda's Fallout series, follow Walter and Bunny as they traverse the Texas Commonwealth and New Vegas, busting big crime rings.
We'll need all we can to expand into Vegas territory.
And surviving anything the wasteland can throw at them.
It's him! It's the Mothman!
Featuring a series of nail-biting narratives and guest stars from across the Fallout community. It's anybody's guess what thrilling case is up next.
War never changes, does it, Bunny?
No, it certainly does not.
True Vault Escapades, a Fallout audio drama, available anywhere you get podcasts.